This episode of Behind the Video is brought to you by the Independent Media Network. The Independent Media Network helps journalists and content creators create their own jobs by building sustainable online businesses. If you're an unemployed or underemployed journalist or content creator, visit IMNCT.com for more information. Hey everybody, it's Lon Seibin. We're back for Behind the Video, episode number 72. I apologize for the really crappy backdrop here, but we've had some technical difficulties because I couldn't wait to upgrade to OS 10 Mavericks, and now everything's all screwed up. So, but joining me today, as always, is Tim Street, who's aged about a dozen years since we last spoke. Tim, what happened to you?
Hello. I went to a party.
Looks like it was one heck of a party.
It was one heck of a party. Oof.
Now I've got to let's introduce our guest first, and then we're gonna pepper Tim a little bit about this party. So joining us is Dane Golden. Dane, you feeling better this week?
What's up? Yes, I am done with my digital Hollywood partying, and thank you for allowing me to postpone a week.
So good. We're gonna talk a little bit more about digital Hollywood in a second, and while I see. As always, Google changes Hangouts, which is good. We like change, but except when we're trying to find the buttons. But this is what happened to Tim. So what a brilliant costume, Tim. I mean, this is like you're a dead ringer for the guy.
Thanks.
This is Colonel Sanders we're looking at. Tim is, as you may know if you watch the video, he has adopted the look of Colonel Sanders. He just didn't have the white beard. Now he does. So... Doug Hardy writes in and says, I'm always down for a podcast with the Colonel in the chat room there, Tim.
There you go. But, yeah, it's fun being the Colonel, you know, going out to the drugstore and liquor store to pick up some beer for a party. You get a lot of respect as the Colonel, you know. People just look at you and they're like, oh, yeah. It's a good costume. So I think it's the best costume I've done.
It's excellent, and it fits your. It's you know it's compatible with the look that you've got now. You know, I mean, you built that beard up, and it's just the perfect. The beard was perfect to the Colonel Sanders beard right off the bat, just without the color. So
yeah, I don't know what I'm gonna do next year. Although tonight I left my hair white because tonight I'm gonna wear a black suit and go as the Monopoly guy.
That's great. It's a multi-compatible look for a couple of different things. And Tim, I guess in LA, like the Halloween costumes are really extreme, right? I mean, you've really got to step up your game to really be a part of it, right?
Yeah, you do get a lot of elaborate costumes, especially if you go to West Hollywood parties. They're fabulous, and it's tough to compete with a lot of these people. They work all year on their costume. Mine was kind of thrown together at the last minute, but I knew what I was doing. Like, I thought about it ahead of time.
It was a work of brilliance, because I was just going to get a Muppets Beaker rubber mask and just walk around with that. But
yeah, masks are a commitment. Like, there was a great costume last night. The guy that threw the party, he had you know those little monkeys that have the symbols and they kind of clap the symbols together?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he was that.
Oh, that's great.
Except he had to wear a mask the whole time. And oof, you just, you know, you sweat wearing a mask.
Oh, you sure do. You sure do.
But Dane, his costume was awesome.
Now, Dane, you're joining us from L.A. also, or California is thereabouts. So what did you dress up as?
I didn't dress up as anything. I dressed up as somebody giving out candy. That was it.
I did the same thing, except nobody showed up to my house.
I did go, you can look on my Facebook or whatever, I did for like 7 consecutive years go as Austin Powers.
Oh, no kidding. Good. You could pull that off. I could see that.
You're so groovy, baby. Yeah. Smashing.
Yeah, that's a good one. They need to come out with another Austin Powers. Rumor has it they are.
Absolutely.
I'll go see it.
All the people that were supposed to go to your house came to my house, Lon. I had over 800 people
come to
my house. Yeah, but I live in a neighborhood where they just bus people in and dump them off. And, yeah, and at a certain point, children start showing up, and there's no costume. Like, they don't even have a bag. They just walk up with their hand.
Eat as they go, right.
And they eat it, they put it in their pocket, whatever. It's just like...
Oh, did we lose Tim for a second there? Tim is frozen. But while we're waiting for Tim, While we wait for Tim to come back and unfreeze himself, we'll just drag this out a little bit until Tim reappears. So we used to have the kids who would show up with no costume and a pillowcase, you know, dump the candy, and that was what we always look forward to there. So Dane, you went to Digital Hollywood, and Tim was there too, except he couldn't get out of all the things he had to do to go to the sessions, and I guess you'd spent some time trying to get the gist of what Digital Hollywood was about this year. So tell us a little bit about what you learned and what people watching can gain from that.
I did see Tim there, and he gave me the best piece of advice, which was make sure you go to the pool party at 5. Every day there's a pool
party. He mentioned that last week, that the pool parties are not to be missed.
That's right, because that's the one time where almost everyone gets together, has a beer, and you can just mingle with just all sorts of different folks from different areas of entertainment. This was really geared more towards the Hollywood folks going digital rather than the digital folks going Hollywood. But there were some really great panels. There was a really great, I think it was the Summit of Women in Digital Media track. Where you could see, you know, Shira Lazar and others who were very dialed into the space, people from the DECA MCN, which caters a little bit more towards women 25 to 45. And then you could see other people from television, from cable. But I really enjoyed, because it was a small type of conference, you could really talk to people right after. There was nobody rushing up to talk to Freddie Wong. I talked to Freddie Wong. I just said, "Hey, Freddie, how you doing? Dane Golden, Hey.com. Nice to meet you. Big fan." He goes, "Hey, good to meet you." But that's not going to happen everywhere.
And he used your brand when he said it.
That's what I said.
He said, hey.
Hey, everyone does.
That's right, Hey.com. So let me ask you this, because it seems as though like Hollywood has had a hard time dealing with all this digital stuff, and that on one hand, they are trying to figure out a way to embrace it. On the other hand, they're fighting it tooth and nail. So are you seeing that conflict there? Or was this more of the digital people saying to Hollywood, like, "Hey, come on, you know, there's hope here," right? I mean, what was the tone?
No, I don't. You occasionally will hear, I mean, I think I was at a panel where people were, you know, talking about rights and how, you know, you're digital, you shouldn't be stealing your rights. You still have your rights even though it's online. But I think that they're trying to get on board, but they are still, you know, that's not where they make their money. So they're trying to hedge their bets, a lot of folks, and understand how their business is evolving in that way. One of the other interesting panels I saw had Dana Brunetti on it. And if you remember him, he's the guy he's a producer partner of Kevin Spacey at Trigger Street.
Right. He did all the House of Cards stuff for Netflix, right?
That's right. So who do I get to talk to? You hear me, railing on the Netflix methodology of releasing all videos at the same time. I asked him, I talked to him afterwards, and he actually was on a panel where he was talking about how great Twit was. He just totally unwarranted said, "You should look at what Leo Laporte's doing at Twit." But I asked him, I said, "What was it like with that Netflix show? Was it really more like a 12-hour movie?" He said, "That's exactly right. It was like we shot a 12-hour movie."
Actually, a 24-hour movie, right? Because the other season's in the can, too, right?
Oh, did they shoot it all at once?
I think they did, yeah. I think the other season's done. They're just waiting for the time to time it as to when to release it.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But I mean, someone as dialed in as that and has done so many interesting projects as a producer but is totally behind the scenes, I got to chat with him for a minute, and that was really fascinating. So the people you get to meet are super interesting. Hank Green was there, so I spoke to him a little bit. And, you know, at VidCon, Hank was running the show. You never get the chance to talk with him. But I sat at a table and chatted with him. Really, really great guy. And so I think it's the stuff, it's really the lobby con is what this is.
So it's more about being there, more about than than going to the sessions and whatnot. I mean, obviously, the sessions have some value, but yeah. It's the networking that takes place outside of there. Now, what did you glean from this that you could say independent producers could benefit from? What was some of the takeaways that, especially for people that are starting out, they're trying to get an audience, what were some of the things you heard that you think might be helpful?
You know, frankly, I was I'm not sure if I'm just more dialed in than I thought or what, but I think that the stuff that you're learning really is, again, it's nice to hear what people have to say, but I sort of knew it. So I don't think I learned there was any grand revelations for me, but I'm not sure if that's just me being snobby or if it's just sort of a YouTube 101, or not a YouTube, it's a digital 101.
Right, an audience building 101 kind of thing. And at the end of the day, it's hard work and good quality, right? That's really all that you know, if you do the two things together.
That's right. That's right.
And you sort of win the lottery to some degree, you might actually do well. I mean, there's certainly effort makes a big difference now, but at the end of the day, it's a lot of common sense that comes to it, and it is a matter of being discovered, even like it was during the age before the internet, right? You had to be discovered then too, but now you need to be discovered, and not necessarily by talent agencies or by recruiters or scouts or whatever, but you need to be discovered by an audience and then kind of build it up. So
that's right.
It sounds rather
own your niche, as Mr. Street says. Is he going to come back on, or
I don't know. I think he's like
to go back to bed.
I think he's been completely shut off the internet because he also popped out of the show notes. So we will we'll keep going, and I'm sure at some point Tim and his or the Colonel might reappear.
All right,
or the Monopoly guys. So we'll see what happens. But
okay.
Let's move on to the charts, though. So we as we always do, we kind of take a look and see what the movers and shakers are on the top five worldwide channels according to TubeFilter. And you know, there's this Turkish. You ever heard of this Turkish music channel called Muyap?
I've never watched it. Have you?
I have. I mean, I've seen, you know, obviously for the show, watched a couple of videos from the channel and stuff. I mean, it's all Turkish music. And 49 million views. They've beaten out Katy Perry and Miley Cyrus and everyone else. And it might just be a larger percentage of Turkish music fans are consuming music on YouTube. That could be part of it. But
are there any women in bikinis on this channel?
I'm you know what, I'm sure there are, because that's usually what happens with these things. So yeah, it's up there, and that was pretty remarkable. They've come and gone. Like they've been up on the top five and fall off, and then they come back on. So somebody must have done something interesting. Number two is PewDiePie, who, by the way, is the first to hit 15 million subscribers this week. That's pretty sizable. He even beat out Katy Perry and Miley Cyrus for the top views of the week. They are number three and four. And then our friend the Disney Collector, who I'm fascinated with. We got to get her on the show. I don't know how we're going to find her, but maybe we'll try to reach out to her.
You will only get her hands.
That's
on the
right.
Show.
It's all she shows is the hands, but that's okay. We could just hear, you know, talk to her and just figure out what the model was. But she's doing great. I mean, you know.
Do you think she's Brazilian? That's what BR is? Because I looked to see who she was. I looked and looked and looked. Could not find her identity.
Yeah, I can't find anything either. I mean, and she's really, I mean, talk about owning your niche. I mean, she's really got this down to a science. You know, she's really taking those products apart, opening them up, doing all that kind of stuff. And, you know, product reviews like I'm doing, I'm telling you, it's crazy. Like the amount of traffic you get for this stuff, because people really want to know before they make a purchase decision. And I would imagine she's getting both kids and their parents, especially at this time of day. Tim's telling me his internet is down for the count completely. So he will be back when the Verizon guy comes by.
Tim, you can dial in on Hangouts on the phone, by the way.
Yeah, maybe we'll see if he can pop in on his cell phone. So if he's listening, it's amazing. And a lot of this, you know, we were talking offline this week about this. I mean, a lot of my traffic is search driven, almost all of
right.
it.
Right.
Which is, I don't know if it's good or bad. I mean, I'm building a subscription base. I've added almost 1,000 in the last month and a half, but still a bulk of the traffic is coming from that. But if
you
I
have
review,
to convert. You
I
have to convert.
Convert
those subscribers. Those searchers.
So I'm going to keep working on that. You do an iPad review, you get a lot of views, just by the way. So,
great.
No matter what else you do an iPad review, you get a ton of reviews. So, but there's a couple others here, Dane, of note. Number six was RV Norge, which is a Norwegian channel, which is the home of What Does the Fox Say?
Great.
And you know what's interesting is they are now scrambling to translate or at least put English subtitles on all of their videos. Because they're getting a ton. I think they have like 688,000 subscribers now. And they're getting a ton of viewership in there. I mean, it's one of those things where going viral can become your, you know, almost a curse and a blessing, right?
Well, for those who aren't aware of the closed captioning feature on YouTube, it's actually great, and you can do a little annotation that says, you know, click here for your language, and people can scroll and each do their own language. And we do this for some of our clients because if the transcription is in the video unit, it makes it more searchable for that language. So that's something that people are not aware of, most people.
So especially, I guess, if you have a script written, you should probably just upload the script to the video, right? If you're doing like a news story or something like that?
Yeah, and the YouTube feature will even sync it.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fascinating. So if I have it written out, it will then match my words to the time on the video that I've written out.
Yeah, pretty well. Yeah, it's much better than the auto-transcribe, which is crap.
It's almost comical sometimes, the auto-transcribe, so it's pretty fascinating. But yeah, they are scrambling to get these subtitles up because they've developed, you know, a real hit on their hands with What Does the Fox Say? 188 million views or some crazy number like that. So
call me, guys. I can help you with that.
Dane can help you out. So give him a ring at hey.com. Number 15 was also interesting on the list, and this was Marvel UK. Interestingly enough, what's driving their they were the Tube Filter's biggest gainer this week. What was driving their growth was the fact that they have a Captain America trailer on the thing. So the UK Marvel channel is growing because of Captain America. So there you go. Interesting stuff. So here's an interesting story, again, from Tube Filter. Tim and I were joking we should become Tube Filter's podcast, but they always have so many good discussion points to launch off from. So YouTube is going to kind of become almost a go-between when you've had enough of your multi-channel network. So I guess they're going to have a button that you can click in your account, and it will notify YouTube that you want to be freed of your associated multi-channel network. It doesn't mean you will be freed because, of course, there's legal documents that bind you to them, but apparently they are willing now to kind of get in the middle of some of these discussions. It's kind of surprising that they are willing to do that. So, Dane, any thoughts on this? I mean, there's a lot more to multi-channel networks than just the big guys, right? There's a lot of little ones. I get contacted all the time by people looking to, you know, take a chunk of my revenue. So what do you think?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of angles to this, and it's not just that there's a small multi-channel networks, but there's also small partners. Mm. So, you know, some of these multi-channel networks have 70,000 partners. So, this is going to be very interesting on several levels. YouTube may or may not know what they're getting into.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. There's a lot of, I mean, there's all these side agreements that come into this thing, and Dane, when you sign up with one of these folks, one of the terms is that you have to turn over your AdWords or at least attach your YouTube AdWords account to theirs, right? Is that the typical process?
Yeah, according to this article, and then the MCN has what's called the YouTube CMS, which most of us never see, which it enables them to manage multiple channels.
Okay.
And what we're seeing here is we're seeing YouTube trying to establish more concrete guidelines as to how this works. And we've never really, I don't think we've really seen this in any other medium because there's never been a monopoly like this in entertainment before. Maybe the FCC is the only thing I can think of that is equivalent to this situation. So YouTube has said, yes, you, the MCN, are, you know, have certain rights, and then YouTubers have certain rights. And now they're saying, well, you have to also agree to these new rules to be an MCN. And the rule is, and I think this is part of the same article, is that you have some partners that you have a greater managed relationship with that you consider higher value, but now you're also liable if they do a cover of a song and you get sued, you're on the hook.
Right. So you're indemnifying YouTube from being having that to deal with that issue that the network's responsible. And that was that big lawsuit, right? One of the big channels is still getting sued over that.
I think,
right?
Full Screen. Yeah.
Full Screen is right.
YouTube is not indemnified by any means. You can sue anybody about anything. However, right. They're spreading the blame a little bit, right. And then you can be an affiliate as well, which is a lower degree of relationship. You, the MCN, take on less responsibility. However, you also get less money. Mm. And I think you're going to see a lot more stuff about this over the next few months as the specifics play out and you start to see reports of, or maybe even open letters of what someone's sending about their partnership and how they're not happy. And you are going to see a lot more jumping and poaching from MCN to MCN.
Oh, right, going after some of the talent and whatnot. Yeah, you know, I it's funny because every at least once a week now, I'm getting emails from, you know, kind of like the lower rung.
I'd like to see some of those.
Yeah, I'll send you a few. And what's funny is I immediately go and start doing my research. So one of them actually, you know, claims to be affiliated with, I think it was either with Full Screen or Machinima, even though it wasn't them at all. I mean, it was completely no relationship, but they tried to make it out into being something like that. And what they offer you is, you know, really all they really offer you is is some access to their generic music library, the royalty free.
I want to post those on my blog, so send me those.
Yeah, I'll send you a couple of them it's funny. And what happens is they go after these kids who, you know, have some traffic but not a huge amount. You know, maybe they have about what I have, and they get them all excited, like, oh my gosh, I've been recognized, I'm going to get all this stuff. And really all they're doing is taking a chunk of your revenue. They never talk about how much revenue they take from you in the process, mind you. But it's funny just to see some of these people all excited about, you know, being recruited into one of these networks that's really not going to provide any value to them at all. And the Disney Collector is a great example. She's got no network. She's just built it on her own. That's rare, of course, but I think a lot of folks have to really work to build what they've got to begin with. So, yeah, I'll send a few of those your way. I think you might get a kick out of it. So,
thank you.
Now, related to that, YouTube is now offering, according to TubeFilter once again, bigger ad revenues to networks. So I guess for a while they've allowed television stations to sell their own ads against their content, which YouTube was, I guess, allowing them to take a larger percentage of revenue than they might allow me, the poor schlub here, to do. And now it looks like they're expanding that offer to networks so that YouTube takes a certain cap, and then once you make more than the cap, you can keep 100% of the revenue. So that's a big change, too, for these multi-channel networks, isn't it?
Well, it sounds like they're using a carrot and a stick, doesn't it?
I mean, it does, saying, yeah. Upload us more content and play, have more video plays, right? And then we'll give you some more money.
Here's all these new restrictions we're placing on your business model and this box we're putting you in. However, much like Jason Calacanis requested in his summertime rant, this is something that is needed, and he wanted better terms for partners who brought in more revenue. Well, and that's exactly what this is. So I think you're going to see a lot more. So his call for change is actually happening in some ways. So you'll see a big change and I'm wondering how this will affect some of the valuations of MCNs, and I'm interested in both a negative and a positive way on several different fronts.
Now, can a lowly citizen plebe like myself be able to go out and sell ads on my own content, or is that not something I can do? I have to be a larger traffic generator.
I've never heard of anyone being able to sell ads on your own content, except
the baked in stuff, right?
The baked in stuff, which is what Twit has done all along, and the other partners who came mostly from a advertising background, rather a podcasting background, but who had ad sales usually done through a Podtrac.
Right.
So they say, well, great, and it's usually long form stuff, right?
Right. Sure.
Hey, let's upload that. As long as there's no other YouTube ad on it, that's totally legit.
Right. And some advertisers might be okay with it as long as it's, you know, not a, you know, if they don't really do anything that competes in there. When I was doing the local news thing, we were baking in all the ads because they were all local businesses, and there really wasn't a lot of competition. And for a while, we were just using Blip to begin with, so there was really very little local competition on there. And the advertisers liked it because, you know, we did a lot of evergreen kind of content that lived longer than just the news cycle. So some of the stuff that we did 3 or 4 years ago still has that local advertiser attached. It's kind of a permanent fixture on the video, but that's a value add for a lot of people too, to be able to offer that baked in thing. And it doesn't look like YouTube has a real problem with that. At least they don't enforce it if they do have a problem with it. So
it hasn't become a big controversy.
Yeah. Especially for those, you know, those of us like me who don't have a lot of traffic, it's hard for them to track everybody like that. So, So we'll see where that goes. But moving on to movies and some TV news. So top five at the box office this weekend. Gravity is still there at number five. They're $218 million overall. I haven't seen it yet. I really want to go check it out. One of the things I'm learning as being a dad is that it's hard to get out of the house. Not that I mind.
Must
but.
See in 3D.
Now, did you see it? Did you see it, Dane?
I saw it in 3D. Must. It's the first movie I've felt you have to see in 3D.
Well, that's good, because I've been to a lot of 3D movies. I'm like, yeah, it's cool, but, you know, so this one I'm going to have to go check out in 3D before it leaves the theater. The nice thing is it's slowly moving its way down the top five, so I won't have to be in a crowded theater at the time, so I'm looking forward to seeing it. So that is number five. Number four is a Thanksgiving-themed movie called Free Birds, and that is a $15 million weekend.
Free Bird!
And these are turkeys that are trying to escape the their inevitable doom as Thanksgiving dinner, I guess. It's an animated movie. So this year, you know, Dane, Hanukkah is on the same day, is on the same night as Thanksgiving.
In advance, I want to say Happy Hanukkah to you, Lon.
Thank you. Thank you. And to you as well. I think you're a member of the tribe, right?
Yeah.
So you can make, so there's someone tweeting, I have to find her thing there, but she's got some great ideas for Hanukkah themed Thanksgiving food, like pumpkin challah. How about that? So I'll have to check that out. Last Vegas, $15.5 million weekend. That looks like a pretty fun movie with some of our older favorite stars kind of enjoying their last haunt in Vegas there. Number two is the Bad Grandpa Jackass film, which, have you seen that? That looks pretty funny, like a candid camera kind of thing. So,
no.
But that's doing pretty well there. And number one is Ender's Game, so sci-fi, both, you know, Gravity, which is, you know, science fiction. It's a little bit more of a current science fiction. And Ender's Game, which is a totally different type of film, also, though, sci-fi and space-related, had a $29.3 million weekend. Really good. So good to see the sci-fi is still marketable. Maybe the Sci-Fi Channel will start actually playing sci-fi again. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that that's exactly right.
So we'll have to see where those things lead. So here's a big one. I don't know if this came up at Digital Hollywood or not, but there's a video on demand secret, according to therap.com. And John Sloss is saying it's time for less BS. And what he's saying is that there's really not so much of a transparent reporting of money earned on iTunes, video on demand, and other platforms. And so, you know, there's, I guess it started some controversy. And
there's not as much reporting on iTunes? Is that what he's saying?
That's what he's saying. Grosses. Not necessarily viewership, but grosses. Yeah.
Good. Well, I don't know anything about that. I've never seen those numbers. However, here's some other numbers I have not seen.
Okay.
Because I don't know if you heard this, but here's something I learned at Digital Hollywood, which never occurred to me, and I'm not in that space. Did you know that ads get charged to the advertisers? It's sort of worked into the numbers at a 3-day rate and a 7-day rate. So if someone DVRs something and they've watched an ad 3 days after, it's a different rate than if they watched it 7 days after.
Really? And there's a way for them to measure when those ads are watched?
Apparently.
Wow.
Which leads me to the question, totally not the question you asked, but the question I really want to know is how much of video is being watched on DVR,
mm-hmm.
and how many commercials are being watched on DVR versus how many are shown. You will never, ever, ever see those numbers.
No, you won't. And you know, and I think back to the replay TV that I used to have that would just skip the commercials altogether. Remember that?
No, I never used a replay TV. Which one
awesome.
Is that?
This was old now. This goes back probably about 10 years now. But replay TV had a great device. Not so great for advertisers, but it would actually skip the ads automatically. And there's ways to do it yourself with Windows Media mm-hmm. Center and packing all these different software pieces yeah. together. But it was remarkably efficient at doing that. And the broadcasters were not happy about it.
The dish unit does that now.
The hopper.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I could see why they would be upset about it, because they're probably measuring or somebody's giving them numbers as to how many DVR plays are happening on this thing, and now this thing is circumventing the advertising component. One thing that Replay did during Christmas season a number of years ago was that when you hit the pause button, it would put a Coca-Cola ad up.
Oh, yeah.
A little captured captive audience kind of thing. So, so they're not happy about that. And Aereo, they're not happy about either. And Aereo is like on a massive land grab right now to get their business expanded out to maybe, you know, give the Supreme Court a little pressure in shutting them down. They are now in Colorado in 67 counties. And that's in Colorado, Nebraska, and Wyoming, of all places. I don't know why they're not here in Connecticut yet. They're available now also in New York City, Boston, Atlanta, Salt Lake City, Miami, Dallas, Houston, and Detroit. I think they're coming to L.A. soon, too, Dane, right? Ariel?
Come on down.
Yeah, we want it. So they're working hard to like to kind of beat back these broadcasters who are really taking the town over this thing. And I don't know if the Supreme Court has agreed to take the case yet, but it's a pretty remarkable service and a real loophole that they found in all these broadcast laws to do that. I think their next fight will be in Congress. So what do you think about Aereo, Dane?
Well, I think that, and I think that there's another sort of backdoor service that we haven't really focused on much lately, and that's guys like Justin and Ustream.
Mm.
And I know that a lot of there's a lot of rebroadcast, particularly of sports content on Justin TV, particularly soccer, because it's always happening in a place you can't get it if you're a soccer fan, because it's a worldwide game.
Yeah.
And I have this theory that guys like ESPN are allowing that to happen without fighting it, because their ads still get shown. So they
get paid
whatever it is, $10 or $20 premium from your cable or dish company. And then you get all these extra shows of your ads that makes it, because all the people are skipping through the ads because they're watching it on DVR, but they're not skipping through it on streaming.
That's true, and especially with soccer, where it's something that you know you got one shot to watch it and you have no way to really effectively DVR it. That is very true.
So that's my theory, is that they have that ESPN has a devious strategy to go fully streaming, and that this is sort of their R&D.
Mm. Well, I think that might be true. Plus the fact that a lot of people are looking at those torrent numbers also to try to figure out what the popularity of certain content might be too. Even though
that's what Netflix is doing.
Right. Exactly. Right. They're looking to see, because it adds to their data stream. What are people eager to see? Where's the demand? And you know, clearly you've got to really want something to go torrent it, right? I mean, it's not an easy process. Well, it's not hard, but it's not as easy as turning on Netflix. So
it's apparently it's all Game of Thrones.
Yes, that's right. It is. And HBO is like probably trying to figure out a way that they can get their service to people without destroying the cable industry in the process. So that'll be intriguing. And related to that, DirecTV and Time Warner are actually opened up to the idea of having Aereo become more of a powerful force. This is according to Business Insider, and their cable companies are actually rooting for Aereo, mainly because Aereo's found a way to get around this hostage taking. I think it was Time Warner Cable that lost 300,000 subscribers after their fight with CBS. So this is a big problem for them. They're almost being held hostage sometimes by these broadcasters, right?
I think that, well, according to the panel I saw on...
Uh-huh. Also Digital Hollywood?
It goes both ways. It goes both ways, according to the panel I saw, because there's hostage taken on both sides. So it's content providers, the distributors, and it's just really no one... it's a painful process of evolving into whatever the next thing is. And These a la carte systems that you're seeing, they may say, oh yeah, you can do a la carte, except it's $80 for HBO a month.
Right, right.
I think that this is just one more shot over the bow of something that is not going away anytime soon.
It
is war.
It really is. And I'll tell you, it's remarkable how they figured that out. And you know, the Aereo model is not hard to replicate. So I could actually see the cable companies just going in, and of course cable has a massive load of subscribers. So that's a lot of little tiny antennas, but I don't know if anyone said how small the antenna has to be in order for it to get around having to pay for these broadcast retransmission rights. But it is going to be something we're going to keep an eye on for sure. So Tim is still down for the count on internet, so we'll move into our...
Who needs him?
We got us here. That's all we need. So move on to our tips of the week and our app of the week. And actually, this week it's going to be a hardware device. So I can't resist these iPads, Dane, you know. So I picked up the iPad Air, and it is very nice. It's very lightweight. It feels, you know, it's smaller, but the screen is the same size, which I think is... really a good reason to get one of these things. If you're really not digging the big iPad, this thing is really a lot nicer to hold. So very light. It's about a pound. That's about it. Mm-hmm. So they've taken about a half a pound off the weight. It feels a little weak in the center. I don't know if you can hear that, but it almost feels like you could put your finger through the glass.
Is it a plastic bag?
It's metal back. Mm-hmm. The front is glass as it was before, but it almost feels like tapping on a really thin window. And I'm just wondering, at what point does my finger go through this thing? It feels a little fragile, so hopefully the glass is a little bit stronger than it feels. But it's pretty nice. I'm digging it. So we're gonna give my old iPad to my wife's grandmother, so we can send her baby pictures and kind of move on there. But you know, I think these mobile devices have kind of hit their limit of innovation. I mean, there's really no new feature. It doesn't do anything different than the last iPad did. It's faster, but I don't really edit video on this stuff. Maybe if I did that, it might, you know, that extra speed might come in handy. But, you know, it's pretty cool, but it's just another tablet.
Okay.
So that's my iPad.
How do you
iPad.
Think the iPad Pro is going to be?
Well, I guess is there an iPad Pro?
If there's an iPad Air, there has to be an iPad Pro.
I guess at some point. Well, maybe they'll have something down the road that will have a little bit more juice. But at that point, I think you move into like the MacBook Air territory or one of the MacBook Pro units there to really get your work done. But I think if there is any MacBook or Air, iPad Pro, it probably would be in this in this model. So they've got now a 128 gigabyte storage version, and you'll pay for that as much as you would pay for a MacBook. The price escalates, and they're not, I'll tell you what, they're not inexpensive. So, you can get a 16 gig iPad, and I found that that's just not enough anymore, that you need the 32. So now you're up to $600 right off the bat, plus tax. You're $700-$800 out the door when you do the AppleCare for the damage protection and stuff. So, they're not inexpensive, and there's a lot of less expensive Android tablets out there. So we'll see if they can keep the price at that level and or what they're going to do with their $150 million there. So we'll have to see what goes on there. So now you've got a pick of the week.
Have we talked about this before, the vidIQ Vision?
I talked about it a few weeks ago, but you know what? I didn't really cover it in depth. So tell me why you like it and what people should be looking for on it. Because I just kind of look at my thing and say, I've been tweeted and I've done this, X, Y, and Z. But let's go into a little bit more detail on it.
Well, let's see here. I'm going to just click on one of PewDiePie's videos and see what comes up here. But vidIQ, of course, is the, in my belief, they're the top independent analytics company right now. And they are great. They have a whole service for enterprise, larger businesses, and they have a free version for YouTubers. But this is a Chrome extension, Chrome plugin, that you can put on your Chrome browser only. So you install it, and it gives you all sorts of insider data that is not clearly visible on a YouTube video. And it'll show up with any YouTube video until you turn it off. So you have things like a vidIQ score, which they use combined with a lot of numbers, views, channel subscribers, Facebook likes, Facebook comments, YouTube likes, YouTube dislikes, tweets, Google Plus ones, and Reddit votes, StumbleUpon votes. And so all these things, even words per minute, which is...
Right, like the speaking length of how fast you're talking. And I guess there's some value to that, right?
They've found through their big data analysis that the top YouTubers generally have speaking over 200 words per minute.
So I'm 210 in this one, so I'm in good shape here then, aren't I?
Wow.
Look at that. I thought I was talking too fast, and people always say, sometimes you talk too fast in your videos, but apparently the younger crowd likes it. The faster, the better, right?
Yeah, go for 300.
Keep going, huh?
So all these things, and once you start looking at numbers over many, many videos, you'll start to see some patterns. And, of course, I had my golden engagement quotient I talked about a few weeks ago. But these are other numbers that are extremely valuable, and you can compare and contrast. To me, it's always more important the ratio rather than just the number of views or the number of subscribers. I want to see how you're doing video to video as a ratio of likes to views and comments to views, and these are things that help break that out. Also, they show who's doing what keywords, and there's a great thing where you can just copy out keywords and
right, just copy it right to the clipboard here. There's a little clipboard icon on there.
And I use this to, even with my own clients' videos, because that's actually one of the easiest ways to copy out keywords. It's a little bit difficult now to copy out keywords.
Yeah, because it doesn't, I guess now when you go to a YouTube video without the plugin, you don't see the tags anymore, do you?
No, they're embedded into the web page as opposed right. to open.
And it's been really helpful for me because, you know, what I've looked at, you know, because a lot of times when before I do a product review, especially if something that's been reviewed, you know, ad nauseum, I try to find some other angle that I want to pursue. And I go and look at some of the other videos, and especially the popular ones with high scores, and look at what tags they're using to make sure that I include it on there. Because that really, the keywords really are critical to getting sucked up into that algorithm properly, right?
Absolutely. First three are the most important ones, but feel free to do a lot of them.
So let me ask you, so that's interesting. So the order, so the first three keywords should be the most pertinent keywords that you put in?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. In order, rank them in order of importance.
Oh, I see. That's intriguing. So, for example, in my iPad thing, I have iPad Gadget, the YouTube designation, before my iPad Air. I should probably swap those out, right?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I should probably
do that. And that's actually, but see, how are you going to do that? Because you can't just type in the keywords in front, you have to copy out all your keywords.
Oh, right, and then repaste
and then enter them back in.
Right. It's a little bit of work on getting that put together, but well, that's interesting. Yeah, the vidIQ score, they don't really talk about their algorithm. You were very transparent in your algorithm. Is it? You would imagine it's probably a similar thing that they.
Theirs is weighted more towards views.
Okay. And yours, and you believe it's more about engagement and views than it is just about views alone.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, I think that, I mean, they include, and frankly, I help them a little bit with this, to do ratio of, you know, the ratios that I'm talking about. So I'm looking at a PewDiePie video here. He has YouTube likes are 1.85% of views. That's a video with 31 million views that I'm looking at. Let's see, what's the date on this? Oh, this is back in June. Mm-hmm. So 31 million views on a particular video, but still, even with all those viewers, 1.8%, 8.5% were likes. And it doesn't say YouTube comments here, unfortunately. Sometimes it shows certain numbers, and sometimes it skips them.
Yeah, I was looking at that because I have a bunch of comments in here. I don't see the comments on there now either. So.
It doesn't always give all of the same factors all at the same time. I don't know why.
Now, let me ask you this question.
It's free.
It is free. Oh, yeah. No, I've been really I really like enjoying looking at it. You know, and you know, I looked at vidIQ's service, which is really nice. Now, let me ask you this, because I have now, I'm starting up different channels depending on what I'm talking about. So, for example, if I review a thing for babies or kids, I have a channel called Dad Pro Tips now, where I just do that because I know that my audience is not does not care about toys for kids. Mm-hmm. So, you know, is there a way to? And what I do every morning when I log in is I'm logging into each of these accounts kind of individually and looking at the analytics. Is there any way to kind of aggregate all this stuff together and look at it in one place, or is that something I have to code up myself?
Yes and no. With the channels now, it's easier. What you can do is you can. And you should. Each YouTube channel should have its own Google Plus page, not profile, page.
Right.
Now, if you've already attached it to an individual profile, it's locked in there permanently.
Right. So my first account is like that, but my others I've set up and matched them to pages.
Yeah. Now, you can have, once you've matched up with pages, you can toggle between different accounts. So that's how you do it. But you can't, there's no way that I know other than the vidIQ Pro or if you're a YouTube MCN where they have the CMS, there's no other way I know to get sort of an aggregated number.
Got it. I'm going to try messing around with the when I have, you know, a spare moment, which I never have. Maybe start messing around with the API. They do offer the analytics via an API, so I could conceivably script up something if I was really desperate for the data to kind of look at that. Because thankfully right now, like a lot of these channels are just starting out, so I don't have a lot of videos on them yet. But what will happen is I check my my Google AdSense throughout the day just to see what kind of revenue I'm making, and occasionally I'll see this big jump And I'm always curious, like, what video is causing this jump? Because, you know, there's so many on my other channel now, it's hard to see. And it's funny, things will just come out. You know, somebody will put something that I did a few months ago up on Reddit, and all of a sudden that video takes off again, you know? So they kind of come in spurts, so it's kind of neat to try to figure out where they come from. So
and when those do, make sure any comments, if it's popping again, if this is like a long-tail video, mm-hmm. get right on there and start responding to people's comments as they come in.
Oh, yeah, at least a couple of times a day I'll go through and respond to comments. Even what I was able to do with that Reddit video is I searched the URL of the video and found out where it was being posted. So I was able to pop in there and start interacting with the people in the Reddit comment stream on it too, which was pretty fun. Now, you know what's intriguing is that Reddit generates a boatload of traffic. Even if you just get if you get on like just one of the subreddits and you know even a marginally popular one, this was a review I did of the Tesla Model S with my Google Glasses on, and it was incredible was how many views I got out of it. And I didn't have all that much in the way of upvotes. You know, the upvote was maybe in the double digits, so it was like 80 or something like that. It was on the Futurology subreddit. And I had like 25,000 views come in over 3 days on that one. It was pretty remarkable.
Great.
Yeah, it was cool just to see how that goes. So I would definitely get stuff up on Reddit. It also helps when somebody on Reddit discovers you and you're not just seagulling your own stuff there. So it's pretty pretty good stuff. So, well, I heard from Tim. He thinks Charter has capped him. So Tim is uploading too many pictures of himself as Colonel Sanders, I think. So that is he is down for the count for the remainder of the show, so we'll probably just wrap it up here. But, Dane, where can people find you and make use of your knowledge on this stuff?
Just Google Hey. Friend me on LinkedIn. DaneGoldenBiz@gmail.com is my LinkedIn friend me. I get a lot of business that way. People just see my skills and go, holy maloly, this guy knows what he's talking about. You can also do me at Dane Golden on anything.
Anything. So Twitter, Facebook, you name it, you will find him there. So that is a good place to look. I am at Lon Seidman, LonSeidman on Twitter, and I think also on Facebook. You can find our show Behind the Video at behindthevideo.com, which links to our Google Plus community. And hopefully next week I'll get these audio issues worked out, Dane. I use Wirecast for YouTube to stream my ATEM switcher into this thing. Because, you know, one of the biggest problems that I've seen with Hangouts is that they all look the same. It's always like, right, we're in our room with, you know, so I've been trying to make it look different. And I've seen, when I've done it in the studio, I've seen more live viewers than I've seen when I just sit at my desk because it looks a little bit different. It looks more show-like.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to work on that a little bit. So unfortunately, Wirecast for YouTube has some audio driver problem, which is impacting the ability to bring the audio over from this other box they have to hook up. This is like a science experiment down here. This is why my wife locks me in the basement with all this stuff. I cannot bring this anywhere near the upstairs, but we will get it worked out for next week. So that will do it for this edition of Behind the Video. Join us next Sunday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern on our Google Plus page to watch us record the show live. Otherwise, you can find us on Stitcher and iTunes, and do subscribe. This is Lon Seidman, and we are a wrap.
Stories for this episode were compiled by producer Jason Perrier. Follow him on Twitter at JasonPerrier. Behind the Video is a production of Ape Digital Incorporated and the Independent Media Network, LLC. All rights reserved.